From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. These last 2 weeks, D.C. has been taken over by election fever, and KEI is no different. We've been tuning into Cleveland and Philly for the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention, watching to see how the parties and campaigns sell themselves and how their positions might affect Korea. We have a great expert right here in our office to talk with us about the election and about the conventions. Our very own Phil Eskeland is here to share his insights. Phil is our Executive Director of Operations and Policy, and he has extensive experience in politics, including 25 years working on the Hill. So we're very excited to talk to him today. Phil, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
So I'd like to jump straight into the Democratic Convention, since that's what's going on right now. In your watching the convention and looking at the party platform that you have written about for KEI, is there anything that stands out as new or surprising, something that you didn't expect to come out of this convention so far?
I don't know if it's so much surprising, but basically the language on trade and the displays I've seen on the convention floor has been very anti-trade. When you compare the past party platforms, even in both parties, obviously, the Republicans more so than the Democrats, they've always had a good balance in terms of talking about the benefits of trade, and it's good for our American economy. But now there's more and more angst and protest against trade. As you can see on the convention floor, people unfurled handmade anti-TPP signs, and the backtracking by Senator Kaine, where he initially was positive about trade and even had nice words to say about Trans-Pacific Partnership, and is now switched and saying that he's opposed to it in its current form. So that's one of the surprising things that's come out of this convention.
And so TPP is one of the things that will affect the Asia-Pacific, Korea being part of that, but not part of the TPP. What are some of the other things that were specifically mentioned about Korea or that you think would tangentially affect Korea that came out of the party platform so far?
Well, in relation to Korea, both party platforms reaffirm the alliance and they take strong stance against North Korea. I think the Democratic Party platform was a little bit more colorful in its language in describing the North Korean leader, but I was also pleasantly surprised to see that the Republican platform expressed a specific commitment to defend South Korea from any unprovoked attack from North Korea. Now, the background to this is that party platforms do not govern how a candidate actually governs. So at least the foreign policy people in the campaigns have emphasized the importance of standing by with the South Korean alliance. I think Hillary Clinton has expressed that on several occasions, but the problem is some of the rhetoric from Donald Trump is troubling on that front. So hopefully the language in the Republican Party platform will reinforce those within that campaign to continue to stand by South Korea.
So speaking of the Democratic Convention, one thing that I've been reading in a lot of the analyses so far is that they're really bringing out the star power, that they have all these keynote addresses from former presidents. And, you know, of course, Michelle Obama was very highly praised for her speech. On the Republican side, less so. Do you think that will really matter? How much does this quote unquote star power really affect elections?
Well, it could reinforce the theme that Hillary Clinton is a part of the establishment while Donald Trump represents change, in that none of the past GOP leaders except for Bob Dole came to the Republican convention. So it's showing that Donald Trump is a different kind of candidate. He is trying to emphasize his business ties and he's showcasing his children to show a little bit more of the human side. But on the flip side, Hillary Clinton is trying to show that she has gravitas and can govern a nation, that she has this long line of supporters behind her.
One of the other things that we have been writing a lot about here at KEI, our president, Donald Manzullo, has published two blogs, one about the Republican vice president nominee, Mike Pence, and then one about Tim Kaine on the Democratic side. Can you talk a little bit about those choices? How have those choices affected both sides, and what kind of assets and what kind of potential drawbacks are there from those two choices?
Well, Donald Trump probably made a smart move in picking Mike Pence to show that he's willing to govern, because Mike Pence is a governor of a state, and he's also served in Congress for 12 years, so he has the ability to reach into Congress and network and rebuild his allies and help pass the agenda of the Republican administration. He's also demonstrating that Donald Trump is serious about governing. Otherwise, he would have picked some other like-minded person, maybe a businessman. But he needed somebody with ties to the quote-unquote establishment. On Hillary Clinton's side, she needed to show that she can also reach out to Congress and also reach out to someone who served in an executive capacity. So I think in both candidates, they're trying to show that their vice presidential nominee would be able to serve as president should something terrible happen, that they could serve on day one and also serve to advance the interests of their administration in terms of moving legislation through Congress.
Do you see any potential drawbacks to either of these candidates, the vice presidential nominees?
Well, everybody does have drawbacks. Mike Pence, he kind of fumbled on the religious freedom issue in Indiana, and that could cause some heartburn for some individuals. Also has a written record and a spoken record, both before he served in Congress and while he was in Congress. So I'm sure someone will find some sentence that he wrote 15 years ago and try to make a big issue out of it. With Senator Kaine, I mean, obviously one of the first things was the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that he seemed favorably disposed to that agreement. And then all of a sudden he was forced to kind of switch his position. Also, he served as governor of Virginia, and at the time he was able to accept a whole range of gifts that kind of got the next governor, Bob McDonald, in trouble. So people will probably go back and examine all the gifts that he received when he was governor and try to find something bad about one or two of those gifts. The other issue, too, is that Senator Kaine is also pretty progressive on various social issues, a little bit of an outliner for a state like Virginia. So I don't know if that will, how that will play in the general election. But his stance on TPP is probably the most notable change.
Speaking of TPP and trade agreements, this is one thing that Donald Trump has talked about over and over, that he is against free trade agreements or wants to at least renegotiate them for more favorable conditions for the U.S. But his vice presidential nominee, Mike Pence, when he was in Congress, he spoke in favor of a lot of these and voted in favor of a lot of these, including the CORUS FTA with Korea. How do you think they'll be able to square those things and square this pretty extreme difference of opinion there?
It's tough to say. I mean, Donald Trump has said that he's not against free trade. He just wants smart trade agreements. So either people will have to demonstrate to him that past trade agreements on the whole have worked out well for the American people. As evidence of that, recently the U.S. International Trade Commission, which is an independent federal body that operates similar to a judicial system, rules on all fair trade cases that come before the U.S. government. And so if any entity that has a skeptical eye towards trade, it should be the USITC. They came out with a report at the end of June that documented the benefits that have accrued to the United States in all areas in terms of all the free trade agreements. So jobs were increased, our GDP grew, and in fact, our trade deficit is lower because of these FTAs. So they answer point by point each of Donald Trump's objections to trade in general. I just think more people have to educate him on the value of these agreements and just get some basic facts straight, such as, you know, the U.S. does not have a free trade agreement with China. So, I mean, once we overcome some of these hurdles, hopefully he'll see the benefits. And also he has to be aware of various U.S. government programs that are designed to help workers negatively affected by trade. So maybe if we can direct his attention to trying to reform and beef up these trade adjustment assistance programs to help people that are negatively affected by imports to transition to a new and better paying job, I think that'll be the best for all of us.
Going back to the Democratic side, it's been really highlighted this week in Philadelphia, but there's not necessarily a unified backing for Hillary Clinton, even to this point. And we saw a lot of protests, a lot of Bernie supporters, and just a lot of anti-Hillary rhetoric in the protests outside of the convention and in some of the responses to the speakers. Do you think that at this point they have laid that to rest with Bernie coming out and telling people to back Hillary? Do you think that that will continue to be an issue going forward?
Potentially it's an issue. I think a key indicator to watch is the various polling that takes place that includes both of the two independent candidates that are running. You can't just look at polls that put Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. You have to include the Libertarian candidate and also the Green Party candidate. And they are increasing in the polls. In fact, the Green Party candidate was always at 1%, and now she's moved up to 3% in the polls. The Libertarian candidate is at 9% in the latest poll. And then I think as these email scandal of the DNC comes out, maybe more and more people will be attracted to the Green Party candidate, those of the camp who voted for Bernie Sanders. It's not going to be a majority, but you don't really need a majority. You just need a significant minority to influence elections, as we saw in 2000 in Florida, where probably Ralph Nader took away votes from Al Gore that enabled George W. Bush to win Florida.
We've heard a lot as we've been watching these conventions that this is one of the most progressive platforms that the Democratic Party has ever put forward. And then on the Republican side, this is one of the most nationalistic platforms that has been put forward. Do you see this as more polarized? Is it really more polarized than you've seen in the past? From your experience, is it going to be really difficult to bring together people either way, no matter who wins, because of this gap between these two platforms at this point?
Yes, I think that's a real potential. It'll be difficult for whoever wins to unite the American people behind a particular agenda. But also keep in mind, too, as mentioned before, platforms are not binding on the candidates. In fact, it's the political activists on both sides that write it. And so the most extreme on both sides are usually the most motivated to come to the platform meetings and offer suggestions for language. So they may not reflect the actual views of the candidate. And it's also important to remember, too, that platforms are mostly dedicated to domestic issues. And there's only a smidgen, relatively speaking, on defense and foreign affairs. Out of a huge platform, probably only maybe 15-20% is dedicated to overseas issues. But yeah, the electorate is increasingly divided, and that's reflected in the party platforms and will probably be reflective when the new administration takes off. And there are multiple reasons for that, well beyond the discussion of this in terms of where people get their media and news sources, where they live, etc.
So to wrap up, looking forward, as the conventions finish and we're moving into the real meat of the general election, what would be your, I guess, advice from your experience for each of the candidates, for each of the campaigns? Where do they really need to focus moving forward, and what would be the next step for each of these sides?
Well, I think the most important issue in this election, as in many other past elections, is on jobs and economic security. I think one of the reasons why we have all this tension is because people are uncertain as to whether or not they'll have their job in a month from now. And those that are unemployed, they're having a difficult time trying to find jobs in their skill area. So I think once we try to solve some of these issues, then a lot of the other problems will, well, I shouldn't say will, but may go away. Obviously, the top priority of any president is in the foreign affairs and defense field, to defend the United States against attacks by our foreign enemies. But underneath that is people want to feel secure in their current jobs, feel secure about the immediate future of the economy, and also they want to give their children good opportunities in the future, and that their children's lives will be better than theirs. So once we can develop policies that try to help address those things, a lot of other contentious items would go by the wayside.
All right, Phil, thank you so much for sitting down with me and sharing your expertise.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. As always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please remember to subscribe on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, and we'll see you here again next week.